Welcome, everyone, for this session of today's Growth Summit on client referrals, in particular, how to curate that growth channel that every firm has ultimately needs, and then how do we actually make the most of it? I want to do a quick poll. Leona, can we do that poll? Or are we going to do a chat poll and see how fancy we can get over here? Do you have a structured referral process? Am I supposed to
So the
see
questions are in the Cvent lesson, if you guys
it? Oh,
want to
okay.
answer them
It's like I'm looking in Zoom. I
there. Yeah.
can't get there from here because I'm stuck in Zoom as the
Oh
poll.
no. Okay, well, let me see what they
Oh no,
said.
it's okay. I don't have to answer the questions, they do. Oh, you're right. I can't see them. Do you how many of them have a structured referral process?
Looks like 20% yes, somewhat, 20% no, not really, and 66% no, not at all.
Right. So interestingly, referrals are the number one source of business, although that is going down, as we talked about in this morning's opening. Organic growth from client referrals has dropped from about 9% to just around 3% in the last 6 or 7 years. And it's not because clients aren't great interested anymore. Demand is actually on the rise. It's because they have other ways to find support. If they want a referral, they can go to a blog or a newsletter or a webinar that they've been marketed to and through. They don't have to go to their neighbor or their accountant anymore. What percentage of your new clients are from referrals? This is not scientific, but best guess. 50%, 100%, 80%. What do we have, Leona?
All right, they're coming in. Oh, all right. It's about half and half, 0 to 25%, and then over 50%.
And then, would you consider your client referral approach to be passive or active? I'm going to guess passive, given that 80% of you don't have a structured process. We'll see
Yep.
what. Yep.
So far, everyone said passive.
So, this is where we really want to sit in that space of taking off our advisor hat and putting on our business owner hat, right? Shifting from reactive to proactive. From instinct to intention, and asking ourselves why the single largest source of business, right? 88% of firms get business from clients. Most firms get most of their business from clients. And yet, most firms do nothing to nurture client relationships or referrals in ways that will generate them. How logical is that? Not remotely. Literally, the easiest source of business that's right in front of us is the one that we pay the least attention to. So what we're noticing is those organic rates drop. If the amount of business that we're getting comes from referrals goes down, if we had 10 clients a year that referred 2 people and we now have 3 people that refer, that's 7 people who are not referring. Right, that's a material dip in business if each of those percentage point represents one person. So for each of you, it will be different, but it really is what is the cost of not curating more client referrals? So why does it matter? Growth is obviously pretty essential to the business. A growing business implies clients are satisfied or getting good care, right? All the good stuff. It also enhances the resources and momentum that we have. Referrals and the markets are essentially how we compound growth in this space outside of right more modern, more intentional marketing strategies. And so when something is the largest and easiest source of growth, we want to pay a little bit of attention to it. The number of new client relationships is arguably a pretty strong measure of our ability to grow. Two, growing from existing referrals is a crucial strategy, right? It's also the least expensive because we already have relationships, we have access, we have trust equity. We just have to figure out how to nurture and mine it. And having more of a target audience, again, the more differentiated you are or the segments of clients you're looking to grow. Maybe you have a generalized practice, but you're looking to grow the business owner segment or the retiree segment or the females in tech segment. So that's the segment you're going to focus on for client referrals. You're not necessarily going to go out and solicit them from everyone. Let's look at a little bit of data, right? So we love the mindset, we love the method. So let's see what the actual data tells us. This is from Kitsa's 2022 study. 93% of advisors use client referrals as a marketing strategy. I don't know if the other seven have just locked their doors and told clients not to ever send anyone, but seems about right, 93%. Average cost of clients through client referrals is $886. Does anyone remember what those other averages for other channels were? 2,000, 4,000, 6,000, 8,000. We got up to 25 and 53,000 if you want to get ambitious. So $886 is a bargain by comparison. So it's the easiest. We have the most access. It has the lowest economic cost. And again, it's the time and place where we spend the least energy. 58% of wealthy investors who met their planners via a referral. So 6 out of 10 wealthy investors meet their planner through a client referral. 54% are driving new growth from referrals. 16% have higher lifetime value accrued by a customer who was referred, right? They're just worth more. Negative or less than 11%. So the number of clients and planners who are asking referrals is actually down, interestingly. And 400% is the likelihood of someone becoming a client after being referred by a friend. They're four times more likely to become a client because all that trust equity. If your friend says it's a good restaurant or a good movie, you believe them. If they say the advisor is good, you believe them until the advisor, such time as the advisor proves them wrong, which none of you will do. All right, so are we grounded in, right, the business case for actually paying attention to referrals? We've been talking a lot about this throughout the day. So clearly there's a theme around it, which is, hey, stop. Before you go grow seven other channels and nine other strategies, if you were in the COI session with Tiffany and I, you heard how she works 60 and 70 hours a week doing this and this and this, and she could not figure out why it wasn't working. And it wasn't working because she wasn't doing a few good things well. She was playing whack-a-mole in a lot of places, mistaking activity for results. So the number one missed growth opportunity, not just me, the data, right? The research says of those four growth inhibitors, referrals is number one because they're available to us. They have the lowest cost and we're not capitalizing on them. We have trust equity, we have relationship equity, we have the lowest cost of acquisition, and we go out and we do new things. So before we look for new ways to grow, we want to get brilliant at the basics, right? We want to just get to home base, first base, nail first base, then get to second base, right? We add after we master. We don't add as a way to master. So a good question to ask yourself here is, what would happen if you just doubled the number of client referrals? What would that do to your growth? What if you tripled the number of client referrals? What if you increase the percentage of clients that refer, not just the number of referrals, but what if you increase the number of clients that refer from 5 a year to 10 a year, and then you increase the number of referrals that they each made? Now we've just doubled twice, right? So the multiplier effect, the compounding effect, to Tiffany's point, 19 people are not going to drop out of the sky overnight, but you can see a really nice compounding effect. And again, with near-term strategies, micro events, right? Things like that, get-togethers, board director meetings. There are things you can do to create those opportunities sooner and/or along the way. So let's think about the mindset. One, prospecting is not personal. So the number one reason that we don't do more with referrals is somewhere between I don't have the time, like I just get busy and I forget, and I just don't really like it. Which I think is more often the case. And so everything else is an excuse to avoid the, but I don't like it. And we don't like it because A, nobody here wants to feel needy or cheeky or like the salesperson at the used car lot. You? I don't. Right. So is because we don't want to sit in that space, we don't sit in the space at all. Or we sit in it way too softly, right? We're meek, we don't apologize, or we come on too strong. Rejection is scary. What if they say no? Right. I don't want to sit across from a client, ask for a referral, and have them be like, no, I don't want to do that. That is the most horrifying thing that I can imagine. Right. That's A, that's not how you're going to ask. And B, that doesn't tend to happen. Hold on. My mouse is not working. It's not my client's job to help me grow. Like, that's not their job. Well, if they like you, why wouldn't they want to refer other people that you can add value to? I'm having a little mouse issue today. There we go. I'm afraid I'm jeopardizing a relationship. If I put myself out there, if I look needy, if they think it's not their job, if they're in any way uncomfortable, that could put my relationship at risk, and I'm just not willing to do that. And I would always argue in many of these cases, someone has literally said to you at the beginning of your relationship, here's all my money, Christian, Ian, here's every dollar I've earned. Please take it. Take care of it for me. Don't do anything bad. Make sure I'm okay. Can I count on you? Yes. Okay. Then a year or two or three or five later, when you've delivered on that promise, you've shown up, you've done a good job, you've kept me safe. I trust you. I like you. At that point, we don't want to say, hey, by the way, if there's anyone else that you know that had questions the way that you guys did and wants to be on the other side of that, we're always happy to talk to friends and family with financial questions. Like, that's too much. Like, give me all the money you've ever saved and you don't know me yet, but you can trust me is not a problem. But now that you can trust me, my telling you to maybe just think of anyone that I could maybe help, no, can't go there. That's asking way too much. Like, logically, that doesn't make sense. In the beginning, you have no trust equity. On this side, you have loads of it, but you're afraid to use it. That's what we want to overcome, right? Asking for help makes me look unsuccessful. I don't want to look weak or compromised or needy. None of these are empowering beliefs because none of them are true. If you are good at what you do and you add value to clients, it is really logical to want people to tell other people that you help them and you can help them too. All businesses want that. It's how we execute on it that determines our success and our satisfaction with the process. So that's what we really want to talk about is how do we get really clear and over that? One, we genuinely want to reframe our mindset. If you're like, I can't do it, I don't want to sit there, I can't ask a client. And by the way, asking does not mean you slip a piece of paper across the desk that says, can you tell me the names of five people you know who? Because that's not super dignified and it's putting them in a spot, right? But it works, by the way, not the best. It doesn't feel the greatest, but it works because it's a system. And if you can comfortably implement any system, it will have some level of efficacy. So step one is get really clear on what's holding you back on this client relationship thing, because it's the easiest way to grow. It's super aligned with what you do, and it doesn't cost very much. So how do we do that? And then how do we make referrals a process and a priority so that we can start with the low-lying fruit? So one, what makes a good referral program or process? Structure, right? So strategy, what do we want to do? Why do we want to do it? Structure, what are my tactics? What's my playbook? What's my blueprint, right? How am I going to move the ball down the field? And then ultimately, right, how am I going to measure those results? How do I know if what I'm doing is working so that I can again make sure as a business owner, I'm putting my time, energy, and capital into things that generate an ROI? So before you create any growth strategy, you'll notice in all of today's lessons, there is a very recurring theme, and that theme is define the ideal client. Who is it that you're trying to replicate? You don't want to go to every client asking for referrals, Christian. If you've decided to focus on a segment of the market, you want to go into that client base, identify those clients, and then you want to double down on campaigning around those people, right? That's where you might do a micro event or something along those lines versus, right, sending 150 people an email. If you are already in that client base of having the clients you want and being comfortable multiplying, right, then you can do broader strategies. Who are the current clients? Are they profitable? Do you enjoy serving them, right? These are the things you hear in every single lesson because, right, the client becomes the North Star to everything that we do. You want to do current client reviews. So one of my favorite missed opportunities is I want you all to go back and run a list of client referrals, as far back as you reasonably can. Do the same thing with COIs, by the way. And I want you to identify how many times they've referred, right? Bob and Smith, Jack and Jane, Javier and Juana. Who's referred one time? Who's referred more than once? Everyone else is not referred. If someone's referred one time, it means that they made the leap, but on the other side of that, they either statistically ran out of people to talk to, not entirely likely, or B, it just wasn't an amazing enough experience that their brain felt like it needed to do it again, right? Because I got to put myself out there, I got to say something. I'm lending you my credibility. What if you mess up? So we want to get really clear on if you have 80% of your referrals came from a client who referred once and never again, we want to really look at our referral process. You should all go back to that referral roadmap, which is the 5-step process for COIs. When you get a referral, how to handle it. 3 steps for clients. You can just have less confidential conversation. But we want to know who's referred. People who've referred once are incubators. They're emerging. We want to spend some attention there to see if one can turn into two or three. If someone's referred two or three or more times, they are your influencer. They're right there on that dream list. We love these people. They're on the right A-plus client service model, not necessarily for services, but for relationship. So then you can create referral campaigns for clients, advocates, people who've referred once. So I break, remember those categories we went through in COIs, right? We have emerging. I used to use pop buyers, influencers, and incubators. So think influencers, right? If a client is referred once or more, same for a COI, they're an influencer. They have an impact on you. They have generated interest and money. If someone has the ability to participate, to incubate, to give you referrals, Christian, right? Someone on the list that you're trying to build that relationship with or reset that relationship with, or a client that you know is really connected but's never referred, right? We ultimately want to make sure that we know who those people are so we can kind of organize our approach around them. So you've got your right, your influentials, people who've made a referral or an introduction or tried. So we know they're willing to engage in the behavior. We've got incubators, people who maybe have done it once, or we think they would be good. So we want to invest a little time, right, to incubate and nurture them. And then we have what I call Popeyes. Remember Popeye, I am what I am, and that's all that I am. They're just clients who love you, who will never refer because they just don't refer. It doesn't cross their mind. They don't know how. They don't like it. And that's a lot of people, right? You're not going to get referrals from 99% of your client base. What we do want to do is look at the percentage we get. We want to try and double or triple that, right? Because it means we can do a better job of educating and engaging clients around referrals. And then we should see the number of referrals per person go up because once someone refers, we should create such a good referral experience that they are looking, their brain is looking for opportunities to do it again. Does that make sense? So that's sort of the grounding on. What we want to do is look at those things, get a little bit of data, and then go over the process and identify who those people are, who's referred, who hasn't referred. So again, we can put them in those segments, right? Emerging, I call it extinct, right? This client is never going to refer to me. It's just not who they are. I should probably never put them on the list of, right, referral events. They're never going to come. So you want to segment clients based on their referral behavior. This is where like tier one for a client based on revenue might be wildly different than tier four or tier one for referral. So we'll do like service tiers, 1, 2, 3, 4. We'll do relationship tiers. If your CPA is a great referral source and sends you a client every time you take them to lunch, they might not need more services, but you definitely want to take them to lunch more, right? So you can do the same thing with clients, which is you can have a relationship tier in your CRM. So they might be a client tier three or C or bronze, but they might be a relationship tier one because they're refer or they introduce you to a board or something along those lines. So we don't have to over service people to recognize the relationship. We can tag them and look for other ways to do that. Learning to ask in a way that feels good always comes back to that head heart space issue. We just don't like it. We don't feel like we can do it in a way that feels credible and professional. And we don't want to diminish ourselves, which means we have to get okay with the concept that talking about referrals, not asking, begging, talking about referrals and the role they play in your practice, that you would like them to play in your practice is an okay thing. Nothing to apologize for or be ashamed of. Do we agree that we should be able to have a conversation with our clients about the fact that a lot of our business comes from clients like them because they like the work that we do? Does it seem reasonable, Ian? Right? Like, nothing I should be like, oh no, I don't want to tell you. Like, in simple terms, if you're going to trust me with all your money and I'm going to deliver on that promise, I should just be able to say, hey, if you can think of anyone else who might be in this spot, think of me and not feel like a schmuck. Do we agree? Right. In fact, I should be able to do it in a way where I'm loud, no proud, no apology, no hesitation. Like, of course, this is what I do. Right. So, what we want to do is when we're put on the spot, we are not good at that messaging because our brain goes into fight or flight. It panics and it goes, and it just says whatever to make it go away. What we want to have at every step in the process are referral scripts, no different than the sales process. Right. If you can write a sales script for referrals, say it out loud 30 times and not die, you can say it to a client credibly. So if I just said something like, gosh, you guys, I love what I do so much. I love helping advisors elevate their businesses. We do our best work with clients just like you, right? I'm going to ship into advisor mode. We do our best work with clients just like you who are nearing retirement. I want you to know if you guys have friends or family members that are facing those kinds of retirement issues or questions that you guys came to us for. I just want you to know we will always be your first phone call, irrespective of size. If we can't help them, we'll find a way to send them a place they can get help. We just know that with everything going on in the world, we're getting a lot more questions and client referrals and blah, blah, blah. Like, does that sound schmucky or schleppy? Or if I'm just like, now, if I'm like, hey, could you give me the name of five people you know who? I could get where that, again, you can do it credibly if you believe it is the best way to get it. I just think there are more dignified ways to get the information. So have that conversation. It can be 10 seconds. This is a really protracted example because I want you to see, right? You can have a conversation. It could literally be at the end of a meeting. And don't do it at the absolute end, like, oh, I'm checking my sales conversation box, right? But somewhere in the end, when they're like, great, Ian, really enjoyed meeting with you, be like, great. You guys, as you head out today, just don't forget if you have friends or family that ever have questions that want the same kind of confidence, don't hesitate to let us know. Hope you guys have a great weekend. Like, it just becomes like my middle name, Ian. It's just part of the conversation. It's no big deal. If you say it like you're terrified of saying it, then they're gonna think that. But if you're just like, hey, by the way, other things are what's important is you're constantly planting the seed about it, which is why even a couple of lines in at the end of a client meeting or the middle of a client meeting, right? Where are you just looking to seed that conversation? We have clients do State of the Union letters where they'll do like a nice graphic one or two pager and talk about what's going on in the firm, maybe a tiny bit on the markets or write cool planning and what's going on with the team. And they will always, always, always in those do referrals. Hey, we got, 10% or 15% of our growth this year. Or, hey, we got, blah, blah, blah. You're really just highlighting referrals because no one is going around going, I wonder if Sam wants referrals from me. I wonder if that's an important part of his business as a part of our, like, never happens. If you tell people that you're open to referrals, and I just say, like, we love working with clients just like you. You guys might not realize it, but all of our marketing is clients like you. We're not out on billboards. We don't do any of that. We show up, we do great work for our clients, right? If you guys are out and about, if you have friends or families with questions, that's what we're here for. Like, just figure out your way to be like, I believe in what I do. I'm happy to tell people about it. If you think I can help someone or answer some basic questions, feel free to send them my way. That's it. No pressure, no, none of that. I'm not gonna, right? Just be like, hey, if people like, I've got a download guide if you've got someone. So you're looking for opportunities to just seed the conversation of, you can send people my way. When someone makes a referral to you, you ultimately want to use that three-step referral process. That referral process is step one, recognition. So the number one mistake we make when we get a referral is we do nothing. We might send an email, thank you. Might. Some of you have heard me tell the story around my son when he was potty training. So the first time that Parker went potty, and he loves this story, by the way. First time Parker went potty in the big boy potty. And right, it all went the way it was supposed to. What did I do? Oh my God, Such a good boy. Yay. Why did I, an otherwise reasonable, intelligent human, make a complete idiot of myself? Because I wanted him to do it again. I was like, right. Parker's like, oh, mommy loves me. I want to go pee in the pot again. Right. That's the kind of behavior feeling we want to evoke with referrals. Someone has, simply because they want to help someone else, not you, nothing to do with you. So that's one of the mistakes that we make, is we genuinely believe that they're making referrals to help us. They're making referrals to help them, makes them feel good to be a helper, and B, to help the other person because they care about that person. The fact that you benefit, unless you have a really deep connected relationship, is just a beneficial byproduct. Like, you're just a lucky win in that equation. So the idea is we want to create a lot of recognition, right? Thanks for the referral. We want to make an impression. We want to reach out. We want to do some nice things. Step two is we want to enhance that. So we want to have another point of contact around the referral. You can do more points here for COIs. So this is a really excellent process for COIs, but the three steps work great for client. With COIs, you can have a conversation about their details. With clients, that would be really inappropriate to talk to their neighbor about their financial situation. So here the enhancement is really following up on what happened. Hey, I met with Bob and Jack. They decided to move forward. I really appreciate the trust and confidence, right? Or hey, I met with Bob and Jack. They're taking some time to think about it. Regardless of what they decided, I'm really touched by the confidence that you shared in making the referral. I did everything I could to help them. If they decide to move forward, I really look forward to working with them. If they don't, I certainly hope I got them the information they needed to make good choices. And I would honestly, I'm always happy to talk to anyone that you think has interest in getting their financial life in order. Feel free to send them my way. Right. So now I'm like, I'm a good guy. I've done the work. I followed up. I let you know. Right. So you can read more about that and go into detail in that particular lesson. But this is a way to really amp the quality and quality of referrals, because we, again, we skip over the basics and we get onto the more, 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 and we skip taking care of what we get, which optimizes so we don't have to go find more, because we're keeping, right, more of what we get, and we're getting greater quality, right, in terms of what's being referred to us. So if you were in the COI lesson, we talked a lot about process and campaigns. With client referrals, you're going to do similar things. There's just not as much, right? You're not doing 27 meetings a year, et cetera, but you do ultimately want to go through a similar structure of what's in my meeting process, right? What are my events and activities, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. So the idea is to really think about the role that client referrals plays in the firm. Let's think about this from a team perspective. Growth mindset. When you think about referrals, are we checking in for mindset, confidence, and consistent execution? Is your team talking about it? If you have other advisors in particular, this is where this shows up. Are they doing this consistently? Is it part of the service model? Is it part of their compensation package? Or is it just like a, hey, we'd like you to, which means it doesn't really happen, right? So there's an opportunity cost there, right? Is everyone on the team comfortable? I have clients who literally, less so now with offices and receptionists being a little bit different in a digital world, but they would, like, when people left, every time they'd be like, hey, we got a new guide or a new resource. Is there anyone you'd like us to send something to? Right. They just had the receptionist do it every time somebody walked out of the office. Right. They just found ways to do it. If they didn't like it, they just found ways to integrate it throughout the practice. So really think about your team and how you can incorporate a growth mindset through referrals. It might be a service conversation. Process. You want to maintain standards of excellence firm-wide to set up your delegation processes, your success, your consistent execution. When you hear me talk about referrals, you hear me talk about structure, building campaigns, right? Who's right? What's your list of who's referred once, who's referred more? Do you have that right tracker for client referrals? Right. All of that is structure that you want to put in place. And ultimately, the more you do that, the more leverage you get around client referrals, right? So you ultimately have a process for getting and ultimately managing referrals that you are largely not even involved in. You want training, right? If it's you, that's right, your scripts and your right models and your processes. If you have a team, that's communicating, educating that across the team. If you have other advisors in particular, it's Here's how we deal with client referrals. Here are the kinds of script conversations we have. You can obviously tailor it to your style. This is how it's built into our process. This is how it's built into the service model, right? We send one letter a year, one of your four contact calls you're going to ask about, right? If they know anyone, like we're going to break it down and say, this is how you're going to engage with clients around referrals. If you do that, people will do it. Advisors will do it. If you're like, hey, talk to everyone about referrals, they'll never do it. They're busy. It's not structured. It's not right. It's not part of their habit process for client meetings. We have to make it part of the habit process. We want to look at accountability. We want to nurture and review those referral opportunities. How many clients have referred once? How many clients have referred more than once? If clients have referred more than once, are there certain segments? Are there things we can do there? Did we say we were going to reach out to 10 clients, right, a quarter and we didn't do it? So this is really where planning and accountability kick in. KPIs. If you just say, I want more client referrals, you're less likely to get client referrals. If Ian sits down and says, as we did at that slide in the beginning, I want to double the number of, right? I want to double the percentage of clients that refer, and I want to double the number of clients that they get, or I want to increase the size of the clients I get, right? Whatever that is. Now I can track that. Hey, in order to do that, I think I'm going to need to have, right, 100 client meeting conversations, or we're going to need to, right, do 100 client phone calls, or we're going to need to do 5 events. So how are we going to actually create measurements of success? Because it's not all, right, results is going to be in referrals, but we want to track that activity along the way, particularly while we're building the behavior, especially if you're teaching other advisors to do it. Because first, you can control activity. Did you do it or not? Then, when you've got the habit of the activity in place for yourself or other advisors, then we can optimize. Okay, now I'm in the habit of asking. Now I can ask better. Now I can get comfortable. Now I can, right, massage that conversation so it really works for me. But I'm not going to go from zero to there until I'm in the habit of having that conversation. So, for other advisors, for example, we track. How many conversations, how many client meetings did you have this week? How many client calls did you have this week? And how many client referral mentions did you have this week? We obviously don't expect it to be 100, and we expect it to be different with a seasoned advisor with a full client base than a junior advisor who's learning, right? They're probably not going to be hitting clients up for referrals straight away, but you get the idea of, right, taking goals, building campaigns and structure. And then ultimately, right, bringing accountability with things like tracking and KPIs, even if it's using your success shifter, right? Number of client calls and outreaches, number of, CX touch points, number of referrals, number of follow-ups, right? You're really just trying to track what is the activity that's generating the results so that we can tweak the activities so that we can ultimately tweak the results. We don't know what to tweak if we don't have some basic data. So we talked about tracking. I always say what cannot be measured cannot be managed. You cannot make it better until you have a handle on what it is, right? That would be like trying to do something really incredible with smoke. I got to put it in a container, and once I can define its volume and mass, now I'm in a position to leverage that resource. And then reward. Remember, reward and growth go hand in hand, but as we talk about all the time, investment precedes return. Client referrals are there. They're available. They're easy by all accounts. They're cost effective, but they do still require effort. They're not sexy. They're like the least sexy thing. We don't get to go pitch to COIs. We don't get to be like a cool influencer on a podcast. We have to sit across from the humans that entrusted us with their money and say, you entrusted me with your money. Can you entrust me with the people that you know who have questions about their money? That's essentially what we're doing. And so, how can we look at the landscape and then say, how do I integrate this into my process? So, there are a couple of things I want to do. We've actually got some time in this session. So, you guys have the mastering referral messaging. So, we're going to take a couple of minutes and we're going to do some conversation around this. And then we're going to do some Q&A. But I wanted to just kind of open it up. And if you guys have questions, drop them in because we're going to have good time to chat about them. Some of the resources that we have here are a couple of things. The way to client referrals, by the way, is not just, hey, Bob and Jane, can you send me someone? Yes. having the conversation in a client review is the most consistent way that you can engage personally with clients about client referrals, without question, true. But there are a lot of other ways that you can engage around client referrals. We have clients, for example, that do client events. If you're still, right, again, digital world, but if you're still doing client events, real or real in person, they're all real or virtual, do you celebrate client referrals? So you can always send a referral gift, and you should when someone sends a referral, watch your compliance rules. But if you do a virtual or an in-person client event, do you acknowledge and celebrate the people that made referrals? So we have a client every year when they do their client event, they get Tiffany boxes. Everyone loves Tiffany. And there's like nice little gifts in there. And then people that did referrals that come up, and everyone gets their referral gift, and everyone loves it because then they're like, oh, I want to get one of those next year. How do I do that? Oh, I have to send someone to the firm. Like, it's not like cheeky or anything. It's just, hey, we want to thank everyone who, went out of their way to really let people know and make introductions to the firm this year, like really nice and classy, and off you go. That State of the Union letter that I mentioned, there's lots of examples. There's some examples in the library. If you're gonna, there's gonna be more. One of my favorites is we do a July 4th Independence letter. Everyone loves July 4th. It's about independence. Great time to send a letter about financial independence and how you love helping people achieve it. You really appreciate all their trust and confidence. Patriotic message, right? As they're out celebrating with friends and family, the upcoming 4th of July holiday, right? Because people talk about life at those holidays, right? If you are ever out and about with your friends and family or people that you care about and they have questions about their financial life, feel free to reach out to us, right? Happy 4th of July. Go you Patriots. Sent that letter probably hundreds of times in firms, probably hundreds of thousands of clients have received it. Do you know that no one's ever called me and said, why did you send me that horrible, wretched asking for referrals July 4th letter? Never gotten that complaint. Do you know why? Because no one cares. They're like, oh, cool. If they don't have an immediate referral, which 99% of them won't, I'm seeding that referrals are a cool thing that we do. I'm seeding if you have friends. How many times in this call have you heard me say, if you have friends or family that have questions about their financial life? Just in this call. Now that's my little catchphrase, Sam, you're gonna have, right? But that's just, I'll package that 7,000 different ways. But at the end of the day, it's, I know people have questions. If they need a place to go, I want you to know that they can call me, right? Even if they're too small, doesn't matter. I will be your, I'm your go-to guy or gal. That's my theme, right? Never has anyone called me and said, some people are sending me so many bad referrals, I don't know what to do. That does not happen. You might get a couple of no fits, right? And then we can go back and educate. So our goal here is look at those other opportunities. The client advisory board, great way to get client referrals. One, you get amazing client feedback. Those people tend to become advocates because they're involved. They become very invested. You're like, hey, client referral board, client advisory board, we're trying to think about like 27% of our business comes from referrals and we had no idea. And actually, these are all the best clients when we look at the list. So we realize we'd like to do more of that. We don't want to be a cheeky firm that's like, hey, who do you know who? Like, as a client, here's some ideas we have. How do you guys feel about those? And guess who your client advisory board's going to tell you? How they feel about those. And then, Sam, if you have three people that are like, yeah, Sam, I wouldn't do that, you're going to be like, okay, I'm not doing that one. And if they're like, yeah, that could be cool, you're going to be like, all right, I can try this with a little bit more faith and confidence. Two, when you do that, and there's a whole book and lesson on how to do client advisory boards, you meet with them once a year or 10 times a year, and there's a whole strategy, right? You're going to design your own. But the idea is you have advocates that you're now building, and those people tend to become referral sources. So I have clients that do multiple advisory boards, they like stagger, right? So they get more people into that kind of advocate space. We have them do them by segments. Like they'll get women advisory boards and then the retirees who are couples and then the independent ladies, right? So even in a general practice, you can actually build advisory boards of different client profile types. One, you get good information on each client profile for segmenting and services and CX and marketing. And you just get more advocates if you do it right, right? Because they're not all the same. There is the getting client feedback through client interviews. Right. So just learning about them, their demographics. Here are some things we're thinking about. Would love to get your feedback. Right. Call if you don't want to do an advisory, call your top 10 clients. It'd be like, hey, do you have email them? You're going to love this. Do you have 30 minutes to spend with me? You're one of our top most valued clients. I want to share kind of some business issues we're experiencing. I'd really value and appreciate your feedback as a client. Would you spend 30 minutes with me? You know what every one of them is going to say? Absolutely. And then Sam's going to have some really great questions teed up, like, and hey, we realize that X percentage of our clients comes from referrals. We've never done anything about it because we don't want to feel cheeky, but we realize that we're really right now doing anyone a service. So we came up with some ideas I wanted to run and by you. What do you think? And they're going to be like, yes, no, love it, hate it. And now you maybe have someone who's like, oh, Sam, you could come talk to my, and then you can do the whole like, you know, where do you go? Who do you talk to? Where do you get your information? You know, where should, where, if you were me, like if you had friends doing like you were like, and they'll be like, oh, you got to go to this group or you got to go here. Or you got, and now you've got that advocate and connector. So it's not just like, hey, give me a referral. You're really no different than COIs. You're looking right to build advocates within your client base. And you're going to do that different ways. Your client service model is going to build in referral things, right? Client interviews, client advisory boards. The Referrals 101 workbook is based on a partnership, some work we did with Carl Richards a few years back in Limitless, sort of amalgamated his process and ours, where you're really just interviewing clients about referrals and who they are. And it's a really great process. Again, if you want something structured to kind of kickstart those conversations, any one of those three things will do it. All three of them will simply stack and compound on each other. But it's always going to include some conversations, right? In client reviews and calls. Again, it doesn't have to be a 20-minute diatribe and a plea for clients. It might be a quick little statement. Hey, we do our best work with people just like you, optometrists who are facing retirement. As you run across those in your work or at conferences, feel free to think about it. I'll be happy to send them one of those guides that I sent you when we started. Okay. Adam might sit down with his clients in a given year and be like, hey, my conversation for this surge is what organizations do you belong to that I should be speaking at? And literally have his regular client review. And then, right, Sam, if that's you, you can sit down and be like, hey, Bob, you know, as a blah, 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 what organizations do you go? Like, where should, if I wanted to be where you were, where would I speak and write? One, they'll tell you. 5 times out of 10, they'll connect you or make an introduction or give you info like, oh, Susan runs that and she's been there for 27 years and you got to get past the gatekeeper. Like, right. So you're not just expanding referrals, you're expanding the opportunities, right, to create referrals. So keep in mind, it's going to be client meetings. It's going to be built into the service model. It's going to be built into the client experience, depending on how you do that. Can be built into the service model with things like beneficiary reviews, trustees, right? Who are your other, who's on your advisory team, right? That goes into the COI marketing. When you've got someone's beneficiaries and trustees, you kind of know who they like in their life and who might be getting their kids and their money. Might be good people to know, right? Like, could you do an event for them once a year, right? How to be a successor beneficiary and a trustee, right? Like there's so much that you can do on the referral side from a value add client experience perspective, but it's still intended to generate referrals. And that quite honestly is why knowing your client profile, knowing your segments, right? Ian doesn't want to go blast 150 people. He wants to find 12 people, right, in this particular area where he can have this conversation or do this event or create this experience that's really unique, right? So that's what's going to drive referrals versus just a bunch of mass marketing to the client base. Because again, we're not going to email them every month and be like, do you have a referral? Do you have a referral? That would be annoying. But we want to seed thoughtfully in the relationship that we take referrals, that we value them. And we would love it if they would think of us when opportunities arrive. Like, that's it. Those three basic messages. In terms of next steps, I'll go to questions in just a moment. Some great reading you can do here. You're going to craft your referral messaging. You should all be able to have an unapologetic conversation with clients about referrals at any time. I can, without hesitation, look Sam in the eye and say, Sam, I've really enjoyed having you at Limitless. I really hope we've delivered a ton of value. I get up every day to deliver value like this. Like, it's so my jam. I know you're out there talking to advisors even more than I am, as you're out having conversations in hallways and conferences. People are talking about their problems and their issues. Like, if anyone seems like they might be a good fit for Limit, not everyone, right? But good people who are growth minded, who are really want to add real value, but God, who just want to run a really good business and enjoy the ride. Sam, feel free to send those people to me all day, every day. I will give them my undivided attention. I will help transform their life. Like, there's zero apology in my conversation, because why would there be? If I have added value to Sam, why would I apologize for asking Sam to just be tuned in if I could add value to someone else like that? Now, the key is you've got to know you added value or you're going to be afraid to ask. So that's where knowing your client, having a service model, having a good story, like when you get that locked down, you feel a lot more confident. But the thing that makes you confident is a script and a structure. If you have a script and you have a structure that says, I do this 5 times this week, no matter how painful it is, or I do an every client review and I say this one thing no matter what, or I'm going to put it in a quarterly letter, however I'm going to do it, that is the forcing mechanism that gets you over the habit of discomfort so that you can build the habit of betterment. Like, right when I start to build in the referral conversation and the referral activities, now it becomes part of my operating culture. And that momentum and that flywheel kicks in. And that's where some really good stuff starts to happen. So I'm going to pause there because I wanted to make sure referrals are sort of like that. Like, it can be really simple. And you can have a 20-minute conversation, or you can really dive in and talk about the particulars of those right simple concepts, and you can spend hours or days on it. So let's talk a little bit about where all of you are with referrals. As you sort of reflect on this conversation, what are the key takeaways in terms of what you're doing versus what you're hearing, and where are those gaps showing up? Sam, do you want to volunteer?
I'm smirking because massive gaps. Like, it's astounding that I get zero client referrals, and I'm not proud of that. So obviously I have a lot of work to do there.
Yeah. And when you think about it, it's not that clients trust you or they wouldn't be here, right? But what happens is you define the relationship, and we tend to define it as me and you, right? And that's great. Like, that really works. When we think about referrals, what we have to do is kind of peel that open and say it's me and you and the people that you know. And we don't want to come in. You can, people do it. Again, it's a system in the beginning, and say, I get paid with referrals. It works. You can do it. But you can also have a conversation that says, hey, right, as you go through this process, you're really going to understand the impact and the value of financial planning. As you go through your life, your work, your holidays, you're going to run into people who have the same kinds of questions and uncertainty that you have. And when you run across those people, I hope that you'll think about the confidence and clarity that we've been able to give you. And we would love it, because we just love helping, right? We'd love them if you'd send them our way. That's it. Now, that conversation is different in year one than it is in year five, right? In year five, you're like, hey, guys, where should I be speaking? Like, you get clients where you're just like, come on, man. I want to work with more doctors. Where should I go? And they're like, oh, go here. And you have clients where you have a more distant relationship. And those are the things that you ultimately want to think about. But yeah, simple is hard. We get busy, we get distracted, we want to go chase the, ooh, we went to a session at a conference about an online marketing funnel. It was so awesome. And I want to do downloads and data. And you should, and it's great. But not before or in place of mining the clients that you have, because they have that trust equity. When they send someone to you, right, you've got, 3 years of podcast equity built in, because Bob said, you've been managing all his money and you haven't screwed him yet, so it's probably okay, is essentially what it boils down to. So yeah, get simple, put that structure in place. That simple is your strategy. Right. So step one is just know where your client referrals are coming from. Run the list. Who's referred more than once? So you've basically got three lists: who's referred once, who's referred never, and who's referred more than once. Right. Someone who's referred is in that influencer list, and think about a segment for them, irrespective of their client tier. It's about their ability to replicate themselves. is what do we want to do for them? So if you think about those like COI campaigns or your marketing plan, like it's going to look at client referrals is a channel. What am I doing this quarter? We're going to do a mention in the newsletter once a quarter. We're going to do some kind of a referral event once a quarter with a different segment of the client base. I'm going to do calls to the right top 50 clients, one call a week, once a year. Like you can fill that list up pretty quickly without getting really creative. And if you get even a little bit creative, hey, I'm going to get all my business owner clients together and, bring someone in and do a lunch about a cool business topic, right? Hey, I'm going to get all my little ladies together in February and we're going to do a Valentine's lunch because little old ladies and single women are alone on Valentine's Day, and they often have friends who are also like that. So events tend to be well attended, right? Virtual or otherwise, right? So you can really start to think about how to use things beyond, similar to the service model, think beyond the meeting as the referral relationship. You should have a conversation there. It should be short and credible. It should not be a big hoorah every meeting. That's weird. It should just be like a casual part of the conversation, like, hey, reminder. And then you want the rest of it to be as structured as possible. Hey, it goes in the newsletter, blah, blah, blah. We do case studies. Like, are you sending case studies to clients on a regular basis? Hey, we just got another referral from so and so. Right, here's a quick case study. Right, if you have newsletters, those are great things to put in your newsletters. There should always be a referral case study. Hey, we got a referral from, right, some of our clients, they're retiree, quick little case study. If I see that once a month or once a quarter, what are you going to bake into my brain, Ian?
That I'm interested in hearing from your friends and family.
Yeah, like, oh my gosh, clients actually refer to Ian. I guess I'm supposed to be doing that too. Like every time I open the newsletter, there's a story about a referral that came from a client. When I'm sitting in my little bridge meeting or my business meeting, that's much more likely to be top of mind because I'm seeing, right, clients are being made to Ian every single month. So really look for places in your structure to build campaigns that do the heavy lifting for you, because referrals is mostly about story, but then it's about just shelf space. If someone loves you, Sam, but you don't talk to them, you don't scope the relationship to include referrals, their brain is going to focus on what it needs to focus on, and you didn't include that in the relationship set. You said, we don't, that's not part of our relationship. If you reinsert it in the relationship, which you can do by just bringing it up, sending out those letters, right? Very softly, subtly reinserting it, then you can start to have those conversations again. And then to your comfort level, you can get deeper and deeper. Hey, I want to do a client advisory board. We've got some business issues we'd love to get your feedback on, right? Now we can get into those specialized referral diligence, if you will, beyond sort of right, have a conversation, build it into the service model, build it into the CX, right? That's your staple. Then you can really dig a little bit deeper as you've got time, energy, and capital. All right. Does that answer your question? That answers my question a little bit. So we got questions from Sam, Christian, and Joshua. Who wants to start? Sam?
Yeah, so the question I asked, and I know it's case by case, but what's the appropriateness of asking if there's a certain member of the community that you want to approach? Is it okay to come to a client and say, hey, would you introduce me to this specific person rather than the general, hey, if you know somebody?
Yes, it's all in how you do it. So if you had someone that you had a good relationship with, right? So relationship quality matters. But even if it's like a casual relationship, like Ian, if I reached out to you and said, hey, Ian, I've got a friend in your neck of the woods and he's looking for X, Y, or Z, would you spend 10 minutes with him just to see if you could help him out? What would you say? Right. Unless you're like a jerk to people, even if it's like a casual relationship, most of the time people will say, yeah, sure, I'd be happy to have that conversation. Remind me what the second part of that was, because I got so excited about the first part, I forgot.
No, I mean you covered it. I just wanted your opinion on that and how to handle it. You know, like I said in my question, I assume it's fine to do it as long as you're showing value. and
One
making.
value might just be I want to help someone else. It doesn't have to be I'm helping you. Like it might be a selfish act with good intent. That's what trust, equity, and relationship, like you get to borrow. Hey, I've been a great, advisor to you for 6 years. I'm gonna borrow a few pennies out of the bank account. I need your help on something. So personally, I have found some magic words work really well. I don't know what it is. They work particularly well on husbands, but they work great on humans. And it is, I need your help. Or in a more casual setting, it could be like, hey, Bob, do you have a second? I could really use your help with something. Have you ever met anyone that went, no? No, never happened. People go, yeah, because we want to be helpful, particularly for people that we like, but even for acquaintances when we're building that trust equity. And then you just get honest. So I call them designer conversations. You can say anything you want. It's how you package it. So what do you want to say? Hey, you know someone I'd like to know. I'd appreciate an introduction. Okay, that's not super bad. So you can audit, like when you say it, you're like, ooh, I want 10 clients from you as a COI and I want to know why you're not giving them to me. You got to refine that one a little bit, right? But that's your core truth message. Then you just package it for like, who's the person and how might they want to hear it? You don't want to be like, hey, I know you're super well connected and you're a client. So do you think you could just take like, no, you want to be like, hey, I need your help, right? Hey, Bob, do you have a second? I'd love to grab a minute of your time. I think you might be able to really help me out with something if you're open to it. Okay. And you'd be like, look, I was doing some research on LinkedIn. We're really focusing on, right? We haven't really intentionally marketed, but we're really making effort to work, presumably, like they're in the circle, right? With more clients like you. And one of the places we're really focusing on is X, Y, or Z organization because we think we can add some real value there. And I noticed that you are a member. And I was just wondering, would you be willing to just introduce me to Bob, make a quick introduction so I could learn a little bit more, blah, blah, blah. Now, what you want to make sure of is when you ask for help, right? Would you mind? Would you be okay if? Because their brains just turn on to yes mode. Then the request just has to be not too egregious. Hey, could you ask Bob to let me do 6 seminars for a year? Way too big a request. Hey, could you get Bob to spend 10 minutes with me? And I do that all the time for people. Ian calls me up and he's like, hey, I need to know about X, Y, or Z. And I'm like, dude, I know nothing about, investment AI, blah, blah, blah. And I just call someone and I'm like, hey, would you be willing to spend 10 minutes with me? And they're like, yes. So this is just a whole like we're borrowing relationship equity from each other. And you've got some banked up. So it's okay to just say, hey, would you mind making an introduction? I just wanted to try and get my foot in the door there. And it's always easier. This is where flattery from a good place, right? I'm really trying to get my foot in the door there. And it's always easier when someone that they know and trust makes an introduction. Would you be willing to do that for me? Now, even
Thank
if
you. I
Bob's on the fence, dude, Bob's going to say yes, because man, who wants to be like, no, I'm not sure, right? And again, Bob's not on the fence or you wouldn't be asking. But my point is, even if it's a casual relationship, people have a hard time saying no when you ask them for help. Ask yourself how many times you're on a chair, a committee, a this. Like, we just can't say no. So when you start with, I need your help, we're like, ooh. And then we frame a reasonable ask, and it's like, ooh, I get to be helpful. And people like to be helpful. So yeah, I think you just ask and see what happens.
Perfect. Yeah, I
Yeah.
love how you put all of that. Thank you, Stephanie.
Yeah.
That's
The
helpful.
kicker is, remember, relationship equity is a closed loop. After the fact, do not drop Bob like a hot potato that got used up. Don't do it. When that introduction is made, no matter what happens, you call Bob and you're like, Bob, right? Not even an email. You can do email afterwards. It'll probably be a voicemail. It doesn't matter. The call counts because, I mean, how often do you get a call anymore? My gosh. The call is the old thank you note. You're just be like, Bob, I just chatted with John. He actually spent 30 minutes with me. Thank you so much for making the introduction. We're going to continue the conversation. Regardless, I think there's a great in there. I'd love to do some work with them. Regardless what happens, I appreciate the introduction. I'll make sure it reflects well on you. And if I can ever return the favor, don't hesitate to ask. So I'm like, thank you rocked. I'm not going to make you look bad. Always the risk. I owe you one. The only thing better than I need your help is when you get to back it up with, and now I owe you one. Because people are like, I was helped and I got one in the bag. We as humans, we love that. Just think about it. When someone's like, oh, great, I owe you one, you're like, yeah, you do. Because we live by that relationship equity all the time. what we're talking about with referrals is how you get aware of it, you get conscious about it, and you make it a concrete part of the relationship and conversation instead of just being sort of this like quiet shadow in the background, if you will. Does that help a little bit, Sam? Awesome. You ready to make that phone call? See how it's going to seem so easy now, right? And that's such a good example of how head trash sometimes is just not knowing, because the second we don't know, our brain goes, I don't know. I don't know what to, I'm going to wait. I'll pause. I'll think about it. I'll procrastinate. I'll put it off. Not because we're like, oh, you know, my parents hated me. I'm a loser. Like, no one, like, it doesn't even have to be that. It's just, I don't like not knowing. I don't like to operate without uncertainty. It feels risky to my brain. And I'm just going to go check my email because it's not going to get me anywhere. But gosh, it feels good and it's safe. Like, that's what you're battling against when we talk about changing behavior. So, when we see, like, sometimes just sitting down and having a 60-minute conversation about how to rethink referrals, and then you're like, oh, yeah, I could totally just ask that question. Like, why is that even a big deal? Like, yeah, when you put it, I hear that a lot when you put it that way. All right. Christian, Joshua, questions?
I think possibly both of them jumped off.
All right, so
So
you
we've
might have
got
gone
time
away.
for other questions.
Great. Other questions on referrals? Let's talk then a little bit about referral campaigns. I didn't put slides in here on it because it's pretty straightforward. In hindsight, I might add them back in. If you go back to the marketing plan lesson, for example, or the COI, cultivating COIs lessons, right, you're going to see those quarterly, right? Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4. What am I going to do each quarter by audience segment? You're going to do the same thing with referrals. As we talked about, your segments for referrals are going to be different than, right, A, B, C, D, or something like that. I like to tier clients by tier one through four. And then, right, tier one might be tier one for revenue tier, but it also might be tier one for relationship tier. So I might have someone who's a tier three client, but who's in a tier one from a relationship perspective. I might have a tier one client who's never going to refer to me, and they're in a tier four from a relationship perspective because they're a great client, but I'm not going to spend any time money trying to generate referrals out of the turnip because it's not going to work, right? So that's where I can start to allocate my do dollars a lot more quickly. So that's why tagging segments, creating a tier, if you will. We do the same thing for centers of influence, right? You'll actually segment your COIs with clients. You're going to create a tag because you don't want to put someone, which has happened, because someone is a good client or a referral source, but they're smaller. We see them four times a year instead of one time a year, but we're way over servicing them when we could just put them in a relationship tier that says they're a good referral source. And based on that relationship tier, now we focus on referrals. Are we going to do phone calls? Are we going to do micro events, right? Little client events? Are we going to invest in client experience touches? Are we going to up the gift thing? Are we going to, like, now we can get really focused on, hey, there's 12 people in this group, or hey, there's 600 people in this group. And that can help us really define how we're going to go after those referrals in terms of the strategies that we're going to execute. Does anyone have campaigns in place, any kind of systematic processes that they're using at this point? Or is everyone in the process of putting those together? All right, you're in the process of putting, you can always tell when it's after lunch, in the afternoon, at, yep, it's just after 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock. There we go. The thing with referrals that's really important is because they're so simple, but because they feel so uncomfortable, like we don't feel like we have a natural way to like bring it up without getting into that awkward headspace that we talked about earlier. That's where the structure is really going to serve you. So I want you to think about each phase of your onboarding cycle. Like, think about a client journey map. Where can referrals go in there systematically? Can it be part of an email? Going to be part of your client onboarding, right? Client expectations guide, right? We're going to call you here. We're going to do that. Very few people, by the way, if you have one of those, if not, there's an example in the library. Client expectations, right? Hey, we'll call you back within 24 hours. We meet with clients in the spring and the fall. One thing I never see in those, but we always add in, is not like, hey, we get paid through referrals. This is how we get compensated. But we always say, hey, our clients, right, tend to make referrals, right? This is a business where, right, people often find their financial advisor through friends, families, and acquaintances. So we want you to know when you make a referral, this is how we'll handle it. We'll make sure it's great. We're not going to sell anyone. We're going to send them great resources. Like, you build that into your onboarding expectations page. And then they're like, oh, okay, I'm probably going to make some referrals in this relationship. Probably because Ian just told me I am. It says so right here. And it told me what I'm going to do when I make them, what they're going to do when I make them. Right. When they're at the end of the onboarding process, people are at the absolute apex of their, oh, thank you so much in that first, right, 90 days to 12 months. Where in that year one onboarding process can you really, right, create those anchors around the referral process to, right, one, seed that it's part of your relationship, and two, to solicit opportunities because they're really thinking and talking about it that first year, right? Years two and three, they tend to still be active, but we tend to see referrals nosedive after year three, unless they're a really engaged client. And that's because you're not top of mind anymore, Sam, right? After in years four, five, or six, it's just a meeting here or there or whatever, and off we go. So that's where really engaged clients will refer on those back years, but most clients are, have you have the greatest referral up first few years. But the thing that makes that important, it's not just pulling out or extracting the referrals they know in those first few years, it's seeding the behavior so that for the goal, right, the entirety of that relationship from onboarding, right, to end, right, referrals is again not a big part, not a flashy part, but it is a credible and consistent part of that conversation. If you do that consistently over time, if you bake it into your meetings, if you put those kind of systems and campaigns in place, even simple ones where you're putting the conversation in front of clients a few times a year, not 20, but at least a few, 3 to 4 times a year. Meetings are one of them. A call could be another, right? You could do a July 4th letter. Can you do a State of the Union? Can you do a case study, right? If you can get a good 3 or 4 mentions a year, more if they're tiny, if they're small and credible, right? We're not flashing billboards every month, but that's the goal. Is to consistently seed the expectation, not that they will all refer you 100 people, but that referrals are a natural part of this relationship. They had questions. They talk to people. They know people. They're going to have questions. Magic how that works, right? We're just connecting the dots that when they're in those environments, we're here to be that. I call it the first phone call strategy. Right. We're not going to be a fit for everyone, but no one can ever tell that. And we just really love what we do. And we know our clients know good people. So if you've got people that have, right, financial questions, uncertainty, we want to be your first phone call. Don't worry about whether they're a fit or not. We've got a great process for that. If they are a fit, we'll be happy to like share how we can add value and help them. If not, we've got a lot of resources or places that we can send them because our job isn't to help everyone. It's to help the people that we can add the most value to and then to help other people find the way, right? Blah, blah, blah. Off you go with your company. Like, okay, that's great. Like, if you start that in the beginning, you do it in the middle, and you do it all the way through, referrals just become a natural part of the conversation. Again, not every client, Ian, is going to run out and give you 50 referrals, but the ones who are likely to are going to get better at it because we're going to put it right shelf space. And then the second thing you can do, which you hear me doing constantly, is train them. I call it seeding. Hey, I know you guys, oh, we referred Jack and Jane to you. Did they ever call? No, they didn't. You guys were so honored and trust, like, so appreciate it when you display that kind of trust in us. It means so much. I don't know if you remember when you joined us or what your process was like, but our experience is financial planning is like really proactive. Like, it's not the emergency business. People don't just wake up every day and go, ooh, I got to do it. So, yeah, sometimes people start thinking about it. They get busy. It takes them a little while. We didn't hear from Jack and Jane, but it's again, right? People don't wake up and go, ooh, when they're ready, we're happy to be here. If we can be a resource to them or anyone else, please let us know. You're basically just owning it, right? People get busy. They got sidetracked. If it were a COI, you could get more engaged because it's a client. You're not going to be like, hey, why don't you give me their email? Like, that's where you're just going to know the client. If it's a really engaged client relationship, you might offer to send information or a phone call. If it's, right, a little bit more distant, you might be, right, just give that a little bit more space. All right, Leona says I have 4 minutes left. I think we've covered all the questions that we had in chat and Q&A. In terms of referrals, important takeaways, low-lying fruit. They are the easiest, most efficient, most economical source of growth. They are have been historically the largest source of growth for advisors. They are also the thing advisors invest the least in, right? They're the most passive strategy. Showing up and doing good work tends to, right, generate some business there. But what we're really trying to do is shift from a reactive strategy to a passive strategy and get really clear and intentional about one, incorporating the referral relationship into the client experience, two, baking it into each stage. Where can I set expectations and seed in the prospect process, in onboarding, and in the client service model? You can get really specialized around it when clients have specialized issues. Hey, we're getting a divorce. We've got kids going to college. Those are life cycle events. And what tends to happen in life cycle events? They tend to happen around the same time to the same group of people. So if my kids are going to college, it's really likely that my kids' friends are going to college. If I'm getting ready to retire, it's really likely that my friends and colleagues are getting ready to retire. So that's where you can really, right, think about like, hey, someone's doing a retirement party in five, like, when are you going to retire? And they hit that 5-year mark. Should you not be doing for clients within 5 years of retirement? Should they not be in an entirely different segment where you just totally referral marketing to them because all their friends are within 5 years of retirement? Yes. Right. If you've got clients who are mid-career and they're paying off debt and sending kids to college and it's college time, we should be doing referral events around, right, college. So that's where you, right, in those deeper layers, now you get specialized. Just like service model, step one is build the structure, put the campaigns in place, start to track it. When you get that going, then you can move to whoopee level two and be like, ooh, I'm going to do this specialized stuff and that specialized stuff. Step one, lay the tracks. Get brilliant at the basics. Then you're going to hone, right, each of those strategies and really optimize it. And in doing that, you're going to see a significant bump, not just in the quality, but in the quantity of your client referrals. All right. I think we have adequately covered client referrals for today. Any final questions before I let you go on to your next break? All right, ladies and gentlemen, you are excused from this session.